I've hit record. So now you're really on the spot. Just think of a letter and say a lot of words to start with that letter. That's your sound test.
Okay, I'm going to go through the first part of the alphabet.
Okay, go for it.
Ass, B, dick, E, fuck. that was terrible.
No, it actually looks pretty good. I was just going to say, no, you win. Yours was too good. Oh, who's going to do the intro? Let's both do it. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Jason.
How you doing today on another episode of Just Be Cousins?
You know, I'm having a very Just Be Cousins day. Just Be Cousins ostensibly is a comedy podcast. Am I right, sir?
You are correct, sir. It is ostensibly a comedy podcast of laughter variety.
Mm-hmm. So welcome to this comedy ha-ha, oh, waka-waka fucking podcast that is the JBC experience.
It's the J, it's the B, it's the C. It's the CBJ if you're talking backwards, yay.
Because of that, we want you to laugh.
JBC.
Word.
All right, we nailed it. We are going to do I have no idea what the hell we're going to talk about episode, and I got a lot to bring up. First things first, let's just jump right into this.
Let's go.
Have you heard of a Lime Ricky? A drink called a Lime Ricky?
Yes, but I don't know what the ingredients are.
Well, I just looked it up. I think it's lime juice, simple syrup, gin. That's the key ingredient, of course. And then seltzer water or, you know, sparkling water, right? And those things in the correct proportions make yourself a Lime Ricky. Now, I don't have any gin in the house. So what I did was I made some simple syrup. That's just sugar and water melted together, right? I took the rind and I scraped the rind. What do you call that when you scrape the rind to get the rind flakes? There's a word for that in cooking. Anyway, I did that into the simple sugar.
It's called a rusty trombone.
That's right. I did that into the simple sugar. And then when that was cooled, when the simple sugar was melted and then cooled down, I added the lime juice. And then I added in, I didn't have gin, so I did vodka. And then I added sparkling water and poured it on cracked ice. So I can't call it a Lime Ricky, so I need you to tell me what I'm going to call it. And here, just to add to the description, all those little rind flakes stayed whole. And so every time I took a big gulp, they got into my mustache because I haven't shaved for a while. You can't see me right now. I'm feeling up my old mustache. So every time I do this, ooh, baby, I purse my lips like this, ooh, baby, I can smell lime. Ooh, baby, I can smell lime. So what are we going to call this?
Well, it's not a Lime Ricky.
No.
You know, if it were a little bit more Irish or British, I might want to call it like a Limey Ricky or Limey a Lime Ricky. Mickey, Lime depending Mickey. On whether it were British or Irish.
We'll call it a McLimey.
This is going to be Russian.
Yeah.
Because it's vodka. So how do we make fun of
how about
Russians?
A Lime Risky. A Risky Lime.
A Lime Risky?
A Risky Business. Because of the business part where I'm going like this, ooh, and I can smell my own beard, I mean mustache. Oop, it's a risky business. That's what I'm calling it. Done. Next.
I like how you really took into consideration my input there.
You said it. You are my muse. You inspired me, Joe, like you always do. You're an inspiration. You are.
Well, and so all we got to bring to the table here is that our theme, as we discussed, is going to be comedy, which...
Well, is it, though? I mean, we have nothing compared. Should we save it for next week when we actually prepare something? Or do you want to go ahead and just roll with it?
I think this is an interesting thing, because this is us admitting that we're trying to be funny.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes we have bareback episodes where we bring nothing to the table, which is exactly what we're doing now.
Yeah.
But you know what? Those... The theme is actually comedy the whole time because we're trying to be funny. Maybe we're trying too hard. Maybe if we're good at it, we're not really trying at all. But the fact is that's the hope. Maybe not the like full-on strained effort, but just the hope that we're funny. Isn't that what we kind of wanted out of this? I mean, we can do other things too, right?
But, that's what we strive for, yeah.
So let's just admit it this time.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have, you know... Nobody sent me any copy. I didn't have time to look back through our shitty episodes to prove that they're shitty. So, well,
I can tell you why. I can tell you why nobody sent you any copy. World Cup.
All right, that makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah, I called them up. I called up Larko, and I called up all of the other guys that and gals then and in betweens that talked to you, and I said, World Cup's way too freaking big, guys. We're not going to be able to do justice to whatever you send us. And both phone calls, they were like, oh, phew, thank God, because we don't have anything to send you, because they're just too excited. Who won, by the way? Do you know who was even in the final?
I thought I heard somebody say that France won.
France. Yeah, France beat Croatia like a redheaded stepchild. Actually, I have no idea how the game went.
Because you stopped watching long ago.
When I stopped playing, yeah, when I was 7. So pretty much, yeah.
and then you were only watching your feet and your opponents.
That's right. Exactly. Well, I was watching my feet. I got to tell you, just in terms of like comedy and anecdotes, those were some of the best years of my life playing soccer because, I mean, I played a little bit longer than I was 7. The best part, though, and the reason I bring it up was my mom and all the other moms would – this is Saturday mornings, right? They would get together and drink box wine while they watched us play. And
wow.
Yeah.
Whoa.
They get plowed. And
or
then
not.
They would try to be polite to one another by only talking about how good looking the boys whose mothers weren't there. So if your mom wasn't there, chances are one of these randy old broads was going to be talking about your butt in those tight little shorts. And this is when we were teenagers. But it's still kind of creepy, gross. Yeah.
There's a whole lot wrong with that.
There's a whole fucking lot wrong
with
that.
Where do I start?
I don't know.
Here, let me start here. When one drinks alcohol, the first thing that happens, and this is a good thing. In fact, after this, everything is not good.
Okay.
The first thing that happens to you is that your inhibitions lift.
Yeah.
Now, that can be a good thing. That is people – that's why it's a social kind of activity for the most part.
Yeah.
People's inhibitions lift, and then they get to, you know, really kind of let loose and have fun with each other and communicate on a level that they might have been uncomfortable with before, you know, 2 plastic cups of box wine. But here's the problem. Oh, no. Wait, do I hear Benny Hill in the background? No. What is it?
You were getting kind of serious there.
Was that just in my brain?
That was just in your brain.
Holy shit. But look, here's the problem.
Yeah.
You got a bunch of soccer moms. They're out there. Their inhibitions have lifted.
Yeah.
But that's a real problem because they've given themselves such restrictions in terms of conversation that those two things don't jibe well. Like, no inhibitions and very limited conversation.
So let me see if I got this
if you're
straight,
trying Joe, to do both, you got a problem.
I'm telling you about these old drunk broads, because by the time we were old enough to be talked about, our moms were old enough to be broads. And I'm not saying that I disrespect people when I call them broads. I think a broad is a fundamentally necessary part of our culture and society. I like broads. But these were broads talking about 15-year-olds' butts.
Well, you're
shorts.
Moving on to the second thing that I think is really terrible.
What
which
I was going
to
say,
they've restricted their conversation to the physical attractiveness of people that are way younger than them, and it's totally inappropriate. So, like, if you put all these things together, what happened to these women? Like, well, how did the conversations go? I know that you were busy playing soccer,
right?
But do you have any sense of like how this went down? Because it sounds like some of these broads got into fucking physical confrontation.
No, it wasn't like that. Okay, so my contention with your contention is that the first thing that you have a problem with is the conflict between lifting inhibitions and yet restricting one's conversation in a particular way, irrespective of the subject. That's your first contention. Your first contention is not, oh crap, women in their late 30s and early 40s were talking about 15-year-old boys. That wasn't the first place you went. You went with this whole emotional, logical, psychological Taco Bell manager outlook. And you know, I do respect you for that, Joe. I do, because your mom was abroad and she raised you right. So I'm going to give you a pass on that one. But how did these conversations get started between these women? I don't know. I think, you know, they're watching us play, and we're pretty good. So the games were well handled. What I mean to say is they didn't have to worry about, you know, anybody beating up on their little boy, nor did they have to worry about their little boy, you know, needing a trophy, a pushy mom to make them excel, right? It's just soccer in the Midwest. It wasn't anything. So I'm not saying they were bored, but they probably just got to giggling. And then, you know, maybe somebody did a slide tackle and his opponent fell down and a leg went up in the air and a short kind of the leg of the short sort of flared open and, oh, there's a little looky-see there. And maybe these women realized that for literally thousands of years, men have been ogling girls. And they thought, you know what? We're going to turn the fucking tables. Right here, right now, we're starting the movement. We're going to ogle them and we're going to talk about it to each other. And then our boys will grow up to know what it's like and then they won't ogle women.
And that's what you're saying. The safety kind of firewall is that they only – see, this isn't making sense already, but here, try and clarify it for me. You said a little bit earlier the women only talked about the good-looking boys that weren't there.
Only the good-looking boys whose mothers weren't there. You would never
– hot. Okay, that's an equal firewall.
You would never catch Lucinda saying to Marley, hey, Marley, your boy's got a cute butt. And then Marley saying back to Lucinda – I wouldn't mind changing your kids' diapers myself. That never happened. It was more along the lines of, where's Gary's mom? Oh, she's in rehab. Is she? Well, I'd be rehabbing too if I had to look at that hiney every day of my life. See, that's the kind of thing we're talking about.
Oh, okay. I was thinking like, well, it could have went really, really, really badly if, you know, if somebody turned to your mom and said, hey, I just saw little Jason's big nutsack flop out of his shorts and slap against his thigh. That was pretty hot. And then your mom punches the bitch in the face.
No. These were women whose husbands – these were women who themselves were professionals and their husbands were professionals. What my mom would have said or what any mom would have said was, well, he is available. I take credit cards or checks, cash if you got it.
I like how it didn't take us very long to get to child prostitution.
Well, I tell you what, Joe, it's kind of been in the news lately. And in lieu of talking about comedy, I was going to suggest we talk about pop culture. But
Wait. You made the news?
No. You heard that Elon Musk called one of the divers who rescued those kids in Thailand – he called one of them a pedophile, right?
Mm.
So I'm never going to buy a Tesla.
I didn't hear that. But
yeah. So I'm never going to buy a
Tesla.
How
did this pan out? Come on.
Well, as far as I know.
Our listener don't understand how this.
Okay, so just to give you the really boring details, a bunch of kids in Thailand, I guess, went to a cave and somehow got stuck. And finally somebody found them and said, we got to get these kids out. And it was just a horrible ordeal because there's water involved. And so there were some divers and they were doing some work and they were trying to get things going. And then Elon Musk apparently showed up and said, hey, I got a submarine. And they're like, we don't need to think goodbye. And so I guess he and one of the divers got into a little Twitter spat about, you know, the usefulness of one thing or another. And finally, Elon Musk said, you know, something, sorry, pedo guy. And I guess he's calling him a pedo just because this is an American who moved to Thailand to live there permanently, and apparently the only reason that an American would move to Thailand would be to have sex with children, I guess, according to Elon Musk, which I think says more about Elon Musk. I mean, have you ever heard that?
Come on. Isn't that a bit much?
It's a bit much.
Okay. Well, damn it, I really liked Elon Musk until just now.
Yeah.
Is there anyone I can continue to still like?
Yeah, well, you can't
because like every I'm like, you know what? You know who's safe? Morgan Freeman. Nope.
No, why?
What really like Morgan Freeman? Actually, all the stupid shit said about Morgan Freeman, I think, is really, really, really stupid. And we shouldn't take any of it seriously.
Okay.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's in the social scene, in the entire kind of fucking zeitgeist.
Mm-hmm.
People are just being... Everybody is turning into a bastard, and now it's Elon Musk. I really liked Elon Musk.
Could you say that word again?
Now he called some dude say what?
Can you say that word again? The Z word?
Zeitgeist?
I just really think that's a high dollar word there. Sorry, folks. Inside joke. Anyway, moving on. Yeah, Elon Musk is a bastard.
When you say that's an inside joke, it's not between you and me. That's you making fun of me. So you need to fucking explain it to me.
I'll explain it to you later. Here, I don't know what was said about Morgan Freeman. I know that a lot of people are mad at Kylie Jenner because somebody else said that she's going to be one of the youngest self-made billionaires ever. I don't think she said it, but other people said that she's going to be, and therefore she's, you know, stupid because she got a lot of money from some rich parents that she then invested and turned into a business and made a bunch of cash, and so everybody hates her. We hate Elon Musk because he called some diver a pedo. My mom and her friends were apparently pedophiles. I guess how it all goes together in terms of comedy, I don't know. But I drank my risky business, and now I'm drinking red wine out of a can. So I don't really give a fuck whether any of this stuff makes sense or not, because I'm having a good time.
All right. I mean, I'll step back into it just because you did this to me.
I did.
It's the definition of zeitgeist.
Yeah. Are you going to do the official definition?
I'd like to.
All right. Go for it.
Because I don't know about often, but I mostly I use words correctly.
You do.
Sometimes I've even caught you saying, that's not the fucking right word.
No, I've never said that.
Okay. All right, pump the brakes with the fucking Benny Hill farting, my friend. Zeitgeist.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The defining spirit or mood of a particular period of history as shown by the ideas and beliefs of the time.
Yeah, did I ever actually say to you wrong word or you're not doing that right? Have I done that? Because if I have, I am objectively, subjectively, and projectively abashed. I am sorry. I don't
want to. I want you to be retrospectively abashed. No, I don't care. I'm just interested in your sense of humor. This is a good way to dive into this. Humor is a fucking mysterious thing.
It is.
I didn't say that you were. It's one thing to make fun of someone for using a word wrong. That's easy. That's like low-hanging fruit. It's like a fucking alley-oop. Whenever I use a word wrong, I picture you flying through the air like Michael Jordan and a ball appears and you slam dunk and you're like, oh, fucking Joe used that word wrong. And then I go, oh, I'm so ashamed. But it's all very funny, and that makes a whole lot of sense. I don't know what theory of humor that adheres to necessarily, but it just fucking works.
Well, it is a funny image.
I don't know why it was funny, except for the word zeitgeist just sounds funny.
It is a funny sounding word, and it's a word I like to use. I like the concept. And again, let me just be clear and belabor the point. I mean, I've had a lot of drinks, so I get to belabor all I want. I hope that I never corrected you, especially on air, and if I did, I need to be called on it because that's an asshole thing to do. Telling somebody they used a word wrong is like calling somebody a pedophile because they did something better than you would have done that you weren't asked to do in the first place.
Just because I've had two drinks and that's too much tonight because I was falling asleep about 3 hours earlier, two drinks is going to be too much. What you just said didn't make sense to me, but... And that's all I have to say.
Well, I'm just trying to keep the theme going. Apparently, today's show is about comedy, pedophilia, Kylie Jenner, and Zeitgeist. What's Geist? The thing. Anyway, what are you drinking?
Here, let's move in this direction.
Okay.
You've said before that all humor comes from irony.
Yeah, I've said that.
I think that's a compelling argument, but I feel like there's more nuances and there's other theories that also fit. I don't even know if you want to call them theories. There's just other ideas that seem to ring true to me. I think the irony thing makes a lot of sense. And when I was thinking about it just before we hit record, I was like, you know what would be ironic, and Jason would love it, is if we talked about humor in such an academic and fucking dry, sterile way that it would be ironic.
Yeah, that would be funny.
Because we would be so not funny that would be funny. And then it's just a kaleidoscope of meta and we don't even know where to go. But what I'm saying is I think it'll end up just not being funny at all.
Well, I think that it wouldn't be funny is funny. And if it's not funny because it was... And it's, if it's not funny because it's not funny because it was supposed to be funny for being not funny and therefore isn't funny, that's hilarious. Which makes sense in my head.
All right, then
we're safe. Yeah, let's do it.
We're treading on solid ground here.
We are treading. Yeah. The snake that said, don't step on me, it's got a broken back and a look in his eye of betrayal and shame and other things. So do you want to do something that's academic and boring and make me laugh my tits off?
I can say this. I bet you know a whole lot more than me about this, but
unless you're talking about the length, girth, and lasting power of my penis, I don't think that there's anything I know more about than you.
Well, let's talk about
the length, girth, and lasting power of my penis. So that then See? You can know more than me, you bastard. That's the one thing I've got left, Joe, and you're going to take it away. That's okay. You can have it.
I'm not going to take your penis anytime soon. I can't take it. Don't give it to me.
You know what? You can have my penis when you pry it out of my cold, dead hand.
Okay, so I'm going to give you the three theories of humor that I was previously privy to.
Alluding to?
I understood these. I don't think about them a lot because I think it ruins my sense of humor, honestly.
Okay.
But there's – and maybe you can chime in on this. I was familiar with – and then I looked a little bit further. But I was familiar with relief, the theory of relief humor.
Okay.
Do you understand kind of how that works?
Nope. Unless you're talking about like how funny it is to fart and shit and pee and barf. That kind of relief.
Oh, see? God. I guess this is why we do a show together, because there's all these theories of humor, and then I looked deeper into it, and I'm like, more deeply. Sorry.
Yeah.
I like to say deeper.
I like you to say
see,
deeper,
my
too.
My theory of humor is dicks and balls and butts and farts.
Yeah, dicks
is
and
that a theory?
Butts and farts. I think it's a school, Joe. It's a school of
it's
humor.
It's a school of humor.
It's a school.
Okay. Well, relief theory.
Yeah.
Okay?
Give it to me.
Relief theory maintains that laughter is homeostatic.
Okay.
It's a homeostatic mechanism by which psychological tension is reduced. Now, don't hit any buttons.
I'm not hitting any buttons.
I want you to respond.
I'm listening.
I want you to respond to that for real.
Read it again. I couldn't hear it.
Relief theory maintains that laughter is homeostatic. It's a homeostatic mechanism by which psychological tension is reduced. Humor may thus, for example, serve to facilitate relief of the tension caused by one's fears. Laughter and mirth, according to relief theory, result from this release of nervous energy.
You go on.
Humor, according to relief theory, is used mainly to overcome sociocultural inhibitions and relieve and reveal, that is, suppressed desires. Okay? That's not. Now.
Okay, so let me see if I got this
if
straight.
If you weren't too busy making noises.
I wasn't making any noises. I have no idea what you're talking about. Look, you said that relief, the relief theory of humor is that a bunch of homos have static cling in their clothes, and that makes them nervous, so they laugh at the tension in the room. Is that what it was? You said homeostatic cling? Homeostatic cling.
No, okay, bad.
I'm being stupid. No, that was really dumb.
I want you to stick with me here, because
that was really
damn
dumb.
It, you're an intellectual. I want you to stick with me.
Am.
I'm not fucking kidding. I don't know how to keep you with me here.
Seriously?
I feel like...
Seriously. All seriousness. Complete, totally serious. Mm-hmm. Okay, now all serious. No, that thing that you just read, relief theory, unfortunately for anybody who thinks that it is in opposition to my theory, what you just described is definition
irony.
Yes, it's not. And furthermore, all it does is explain a usefulness of humor. It doesn't say why something is humorous. It doesn't say that nervous energy creates something that is automatically funny. It just says that nervous energy is relieved through humor, but there still has to be something that makes something funny. If I'm nervous around somebody and I attempt to make a joke and it's not funny, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That just makes things worse, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, I may be doing it because I want to relieve some of the tension, but it doesn't inform the thing that makes whatever I say funny. Today, for example, I was at a place of business, mm-hmm. and I was interacting with a we'll say moderately attractive woman, and I say moderately attractive because I'm married, and therefore no one is as beautiful as my wife, obviously. And two, she was also very much younger than I am. And, you know, anybody who's more than 10 years younger than me is not really a human being. You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't exist as, like, a fully actualized human. So for me...
Right, and you wouldn't want to put your mouth or your genitals on their sweet, subtle, youthful flesh.
Right, because it would be, like, it would be such a betrayal of so many things.
I'm with you. I'm a married man.
Yeah, I'm going off on tangents here. My point is this. I said to this person, is there a back door to this facility? Because I parked in the back by mistake. Mm-hmm. I didn't park by the front door. And she said no. And I said, well, I guess a 3-minute walk isn't going to kill me. I said something along the lines of, well, I guess a 1-minute walk isn't much better than a 3-minute walk. A 3-minute walk won't kill me, right? So that was me attempting to, you know, break some of the little bit of tension of like, I don't know you, you don't me, we're forced to interact here because I want my money back, because your store stole it from me, because you're a bunch of assholes, I don't know why I shop here, I also don't know why I'm doing hand gestures right now because, Joe, you can't see them, but I am, back and forth. So I try to break the tension.
I'm with you, though. You broke the tension. It wasn't necessarily funny. Is that what you're trying to say?
In as much as just the whole... little tiny bit of there's no difference between a 1-minute walk and a 3-minute walk. There's a little hint. I'm not trying to blow my own horn here. There's a little hint of humor in there, and in the right context or better explained, it could become funny.
Because 1 minute is flaccid and 3 minutes is turgid.
Exactly. Yeah, that's my point. But got my it. Further point, my grander point to this whole relief theory is that the desire to break the tension did not in any way create that joke. I had to create it myself from the whole cloth. The ironic difference between walking for 3 minutes, which is not different from walking for 1 minute. Do you see my
point?
But
I think, I do. Okay. But I think just conversationally, you are humorous on a spectrum. This is on the lower end of the spectrum where. Yeah. That was a little bit of a humorous tact to break tension.
She smiled and gave me a little courtesy giggle. So, you know, yeah.
And I see what you're saying. That's not why it was funny. That's what the funniness was for.
Exactly. There you go. Bingo.
You did something funny in order to break tension.
Like this theory, the centurion which you've the already convinced and Jesus' hand. You nailed it, Joe. You nailed it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, this is only one of many, many theories.
Oh, you got and, more? Because I got more, too.
Yeah, well, I wanted to climax. I wanted to come to full release with my theory, as if it's mine, that the funniest things is dicks and balls and butts and fucking and sucking and tits.
I like how you stop and then remember, wait, there's more. Dicks and balls and fucking and sucking.
I just want to say, it, before we go into the rest of the boring, and we won't. By the way, just for the sake of doing good pod, as they call it.
Do they?
Okay. I won't go into all these other theories.
Please do, because my fart track has got another 9 minutes and my Benny Hill track's got another 3. So can you give me one more?
How about this? You'll know when I come to the most boring one that was clearly thought up by someone that has no goddamn sense of humor at all.
Which is ironic.
And then you can
yeah.
just go ape shit.
I'm going to go ape
and
fart.
And by the way, you know what? I'm gonna go with, again, I call them my theories. I adhere to this idea of humor that is mostly just juvenile. Like, I want animals. I want bodily waste. And there's, you know, that has mm-hmm. to do with butts. Butts are just funny. And then there's an overlap there because then butts can also have to do with sex.
Yeah.
And then inappropriate sex is really funny, unless there is a line that you can cross there where it's clearly not funny anymore. But, you know,
But it's a
butt sex,
butt stuff. Yeah. It's fun. It's hilarious.
Butt stuff. Poop is funny. We've talked about it before. And then you bring in animals, and it's like, oh, that's absurd. And that's the reason why I said ape shit.
Ape shit or ape fart. I think that if like you think of a situation where you could make the Queen of England laugh, that's a hard thing to accomplish just at all. Like, because you don't know her. I don't know if you know her. I don't know her. I shouldn't talk about you. I should talk about me. No, I'm going to talk about you.
I don't know her well.
Okay. You don't know the Queen of England.
I don't know her biblically.
And if you did, I would look at Prince Harry so differently. Wait, no. That's her grandson. I would look at Prince Charles so differently. Sorry. Prince Margaret. Listen, I don't know anything about the royal family. This is my point. I don't know. Joe, perhaps you could help me here. What scenario would have to occur such that you would have an opportunity to speak to the Queen of England? Like right now, imagine everything, every opportunity, every possibility in your life. Where does the meeting with the Queen of England overlap? I can tell you I have a very slight chance. And it's so, so very slight. Can I tell you what it is?
Oh, please.
Okay. And it's, boy, this is a reach. I went to high school with a guy who now works for Joe Biden. Okay? And he's,
you brought this up on the show before.
I have.
It's fascinating.
So you know it's true. So there's some crazy, weird-ass chance that this guy could, and I could somehow come to terms to something. Like he's like, Joe needs a speech, and I know you like to write, and we don't want to pay anybody any money, and I know you're just arrogant enough to think you're being complimented, so could you give us 500 words about, you know, ape trafficking? And then it could be just because Joe Biden's a political guy. It could be in the context of meeting with the Queen because of some Save the African Ape Fart Institutes or something. Like, not saving the apes, just saving the institutions themselves. And just weirdly, I can maybe meet the Queen. And here's the thing. I would want to make her laugh. And Joe, if I can make her laugh with a dick joke, I would be a fucking god. I would be a god.
Yeah. And this is, see, I'm scrolling through this shit, and
what are you scrolling? What are you scrolling through?
Well, I'm scrolling through. I almost said, because I wanted to sound sophisticated, I want to say this is my my humor textbook. No, yeah. You don't scroll through a textbook. Well, this is Wikipedia.
Okay,
it's Wikipedia, and right. It's telling me, and I've never even looked this up before. I guess I consider myself a humorist, but it's both disheartening and just frustrating to read through all of these different theories of humor. Now, again, I'm familiar with a few of them. I think a couple of them fit with what we understand or what we're willing to even discuss. Mm-hmm. And then it just goes – it's like a black meta fuck hole.
Is it
after that?
Is it a black meta fuck hole? Yeah.
Can you walk us through it?
Well, let me tell you. It is okay. Just so you understand, just so you can let me know that you understand, and let our listener know that you understand. You were too busy making noises and fart noises, Benny Hill music. I want you to give. Because you understand this, I swear to God you do.
Yeah.
The theories that I understand, I've already brought up one of them, relief theory. Okay. Yeah. You've explained why that's kind of bogus. But
it's not bogus, it doesn't stand contrast. Yeah, go ahead.
We can give examples. That is, relief theory I think has to do with those like awkward like The Office, you know?
Exactly,
There's so much tension, and then like there's a moment where it kind of breaks. Actually, sometimes they get really hardcore where it never breaks, and somehow that's funny too, which goes against relief theory in a way, doesn't it?
Yeah, The Office, Curb Your Enthusiasm, likes the there's that one with that guy who was on that show, but he did his own show.
I think Meet the Parents actually is a better example because it actually gives you relief. Like, they builds the tension, and then there's something really funny that happens that makes you feel better about it. The Office and Curb Your Enthusiasm, it will go to the end of the entire show. The credits will roll, and you still feel like shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's hilarious. Great.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Again, that goes against relief theory, but what I wanted to say is there is what they're referring to is something you can point to. Like you can point to examples of
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Your earlier kind of explanation, and I buy it totally, is that that doesn't nearly explain why something is funny.
Right.
Well, that is, this is what funniness can accomplish, or like this is, but that's not why it's funny.
It doesn't, like, if we can split hairs, it doesn't explain why it's funny, it explains how it's funny, or vice versa. I don't know which word I'm supposed to use, but yeah.
Anyway, it's just not sufficient.
Right.
Can I say that? It's not sufficient. I understand it. And then here's the second theory that I understand, and that's superiority theory.
Okay, here we go.
Sometimes you and I are funny in interaction with one another because one of us will do something stupid and we're able to just straight up make fun of the other person, like, look at how stupid you are.
Yeah.
And then it's funny. That makes more sense than relief theory in a way. But I think that overlaps with relief theory because there might be some sort of tension when one person is being an idiot or and then suddenly you break the tension by just making fun of that person, then we can all laugh at them.
Well, that's again, it's just
– And then release our empathy for them. Like, we don't care about them anymore. Now we just want to laugh at them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine.
And that's just more irony. It's the guy slipping on a banana peel. It's you know, the juxtaposition of – the proper with the improper, with the inferior with the superior, the correct with the incorrect. It's just more irony. That's all it is.
Yes, yes. Now, then we get to the third one that I actually understand.
Okay.
And this is – we've touched on this before, and this is where I think irony – now, what have I said before I think is – what have I explained as a key component of humor before? Can you remember?
Yeah, dicks, balls,
you've said
fucking,
irony.
Sucking.
Yes, but we're not there yet. Come on, that's the penultimate. That's what I want to argue.
The penultimate.
Is the actual meaning of humor, even beyond irony. Anything relief? Well, maybe release, but not relief. I'm telling you that the third one that I've heard before and that I understand is incongruous juxtaposition theory.
Okay. Yeah, go for it.
Well, that. I think irony plays right into that.
It's the very definition.
Right into
it. Yeah.
Well, and so does what I've brought up many times before and what I lean on is absurdity.
Yes.
Absurdity. And we've discussed before on previous episodes that irony and absurdity are very closely related.
Right.
And you've even made the argument that actually the key to absurdity is the irony within it.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's... Without irony, absurdity isn't absurd. What do you understand absurdity to be? I mean, what is it to you?
Well, see, my understanding of irony is that it has to be opposite. It has to be opposite. That is, I mean, give an example. Irony, I think, is this. Well,
it has
now
to
that
be...
I'm thinking about now that I'm thinking about the definition of it. It just has to be something that what you're talking about is not.
It has
not
to be
opposite.
It has to be a dysfunctional opposite in terms of the Derridean, if I use that word right, probably not, idea of that things are defined by the opposites. If you have a dog chasing a cat, right, and, you know, like on a very simplistic level, if I say, what's the opposite of cat? You say dog. So a dog's chasing a cat. There's nothing ironic about that, even though we have two – things that are the opposites. Now, if you have a cat chasing a dog, what you've done is you've taken that opposition and you've created a dysfunction. It's not happening the way it's supposed to. It's backwards. But it's funny because you know the way it's supposed to be. Now, if you didn't know cat was opposite a dog, watching a cat chase a dog would not be funny. You wouldn't know, right? You need that context. You need that knowledge. You need to know how things are so when you see how they aren't and you can see why that they're being the way they are isn't the way they're supposed to be at the same time, that's irony. That's why it's funny. And that's absurdity too, except with absurdity, what you've done is you've inserted some sort of like, you know, universal meaning or purpose, right?
All right, let me give you an example, and please don't make buttons out of this. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Why would you say that, Joe? Why would you fucking say that? As soon as you said that, I'm bringing up Jingle Palette. I'm ready with the...
It's the Streisand effect.
It is.
Oh, no.
Fuck you, Jason.
How could I not? Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Let me use exactly what you just did as an example. How can you explain that? Don't do it yet, because I have a goddamn couple of things to say. Listen, is that irony, or is what you just did absurdity? I think absurdity is a better explanation. Here, let me give you an example of irony before you do anything else, goddamn it. And again...
Well, they're not mutually exclusive, Joe. I mean, absurdity...
They're not. That's why we're almost on the same page. But we're going to take this opportunity to boil this down into its okay. basest...
All right. I will explain it real quick, and then you...
Basis components.
Yes. Okay, you will explain it. Let me just real quick before I forget. It was absurd for you to think that it would work for you to tell me not to do something. It was ironic that I did it anyway. That's the difference.
Oh, okay. God damn it. That's good. Here's an example of irony. I am Hitler. I couldn't even get through it. Let me try it again. It's a real good example.
Let me see if I can do this.
I'm going to try Hitler. It again.
Fuck you.
Hitler.
Sorry. Nice. That was fucking pretty good.
Yeah.
Listen, I am Hitler. I love Jews. That's not funny, but it's purely ironic. No?
Okay, fair enough. All right.
I'm giving you an example of irony that isn't funny, and I'm not saying that you absolutely need... Irony can be non-humorous.
Well, yes, because irony is also the root of tragedy, Joe. Irony is the root of tragedy as well. And tragedy... I'm going to go ahead and say tragedy and comedy are exactly the same thing. The only thing that makes one the other is... context. So for Hitler to say, I love the Jews, the only way you could look at that and know that it's ironic, right? The only way that it's ironic to somebody who hears that is because they're fully aware of the fact that Hitler killed 6 million or more Jews. And that is a tragedy. If you go up to some kid from Nairobi, he's 5 years old, he can't afford to go to school, he's never heard of Germany, and you say, hey, Hitler loves Jews, he'll go, okay, I don't know the Hitler kind, I don't know what a Jew is, but you say it, I'm cool with it. He doesn't get it. You go up to somebody who survived the Holocaust and say, hey, what if Hitler said, I love Jews? They would just cry. And that's tragic, and it's tragic because of the irony. So there you go.
Okay, so now, and what you just said, I understood. And I'm on board with it. I actually just learned something there. Just when it comes to semantics, definitions, some things are necessary but not sufficient. That whole thing. Very beautiful. How about this? What's ironic about this? And I bet you could explain it, but
okay.
My Hitler examples were going – my attempt, my endeavor was to get you to kind of see – my distinction between irony and absurdity. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's my second Hitler example. Okay. I can't believe this is what we've come to. Thank you. Good night.
Go ahead. No,
anyway, I am Hitler, and I am sitting on Ronald McDonald's shoulders, and he is unicycling. And we are both juggling gerbils that are juggling matchsticks.
Yes.
I'm not saying that's funny. I'm saying that's absurd. And I'm also saying that it's not ironic.
Oof.
None of this is funny, so maybe my entire point is lost. But I want to make a distinction between absurdity and irony.
Okay, fair enough. I think that putting Hitler on Ronald McDonald's shoulders, that he's on a unicycle, Ronald is the Ron, he's on the unicycle, and they're juggling, did you say rodents?
Yes.
Okay. I agree with you. There's nothing that's quintessentially...
Gerbils.
They
are
rodents. There's nothing that's necessarily ironic about that. There isn't anything. I mean, you could make a stretch. You could, and again, this is where context would come in, right? So, if you're trying,
I make a stretch every morning in the shower.
You do. You make a stretch, a one-handed stretch. Mm-hmm. Pull and push.
I keep interrupting you.
No, totally. I interrupt you all the time. Look, if you were to like say Hitler is a German World War II thing and Ronald McDonald is an American thing, now you've got an opposition and you could draw some irony from that. But that requires creating the context. And if you're trying to claim that this is an absurd picture without irony until you start inserting context, well, now we get into a really esoteric, super semantic argument. And
because it has nothing to do with anything. Well, like you drew some like American versus German thing. Well, you know what? I would argue that that's Germany cooperating with America.
Maybe, yeah.
Which is that's ironic. Oh,
exactly. No, but we're attempting to create the context, and I think that's what happens with irony, with humor, is that, like I said, go up to a kid from Ghana and say Hitler loves Jews, and he does not have a context, nor can he even begin to create one. Whereas if I say that to somebody else, they may try to bring in their own understanding of this, that, and the other. Who knows? Maybe they know more about Hitler than you do. Maybe they secretly themselves hate Jews. You know, you don't know what's going on. Everybody's going to bring in their own context when you try to tell.
That's why
you can tell the same joke to one person, they laugh their ass off, and another person doesn't laugh at all because of the context they bring in to itself. The absurdity, I think, lies in the belief, the understanding, or the attempt to put meaning on a thing that is itself not necessarily going to have meaning for anyone else. There are people out in the world who would be able to put Hitler on Ronald McDonald's shoulders and a unicycle juggling gerbils and tell you, you know what this represents? This represents my relationship with my mother. And that would be true. But for them to think that anybody else is going to fucking get that is absurd. And that's hilarious to me. And I am right now laughing my tits off. Yes, I am.
Yes. And that's great. Now I'm totally on board with what you just said, but let's say it wasn't, but let's say it was a funny thing to say. Hitler on Ronald McDonald's shoulders. Ronald McDonald is unicycling. They're both juggling gerbils. All the gerbils are juggling matchsticks. Yeah. Aha! See, you laugh, so maybe it is funny. I'm saying, dig deep, motherfucker. Mm-hmm. What is ironic about that?
It's ironic that you can keep lumping meaningless things on this string in an attempt to make me understand something. And you can go on and on and on with this. And I think that's a really basic form of humor that requires a on the same pageness, right? And absurdity, if I'm going to be argumentative, absurdity requires a not on the same pageness, right? In its definition, if I were to try to be absurd to you without making you laugh, I just have to find something that you have no understanding or care to understand, which would be incredibly difficult for me to do, Joe, because you and I, and I'm not trying to be I'm not trying to be funny when I say this, you and I are on mostly the same page on mostly everything. We come from the same socioeconomic background, we have the same gender, the same race, the same income level, the same expectations, aspirations. I mean, if you and I were to switch places in life, there would be a bit of discomfort for a minute or two, but we would probably figure it out, as opposed to you switching places with that kid in Ghana, right? So for me to bring something to you that you would be wholly unable to understand or contextualize in order to give you something that's absurd but not ironic would be next to impossible. And I think that's the trouble that most philosophers have when they bring up this notion of absurdity, is because they are unfortunately working in the same context of the people that they're speaking to. And the irony is that they necessarily need that context in order to communicate in the first place. And so it's absurd to try to tell people what the fuck absurdity even is. Cheers.
Damn, did you just drop your mic?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
I sat back heavily in my chair, and then
I do have one more little challenge for you, and just I'm going to say this, but I'm not going to mean it because I never want to fucking mean this ever.
You know what I love about you, Joe? In as much as I claim that you are never going to be able to surprise me, you do every fucking week. That's what I love about you.
Well, but this is my next point.
Yeah.
Okay. Irony is a surprise. I think if it's funny, it needs to be a surprise. How about that?
Yes.
If it's not a fucking surprise, I don't care how ironic you get, it's not funny. let me ask you this. The first time Stroke and Bob said Tony Danza, was that a fucking surprise? Was it absurd? Or was it ironic? Explain the first time you heard Stroke and Bob say Tony Danza.
It was a surprise because I didn't know it was going to happen.
If it were only irony, well, that's would just it have been fun?
Yeah, Joe, it was a surprise because it was ironic. It was absurd because it was ironic. When I say ironic, I'm going to a fundament. I'm talking about fire, earth, air, water, irony, right? These are the building blocks of creation.
I see what you're saying. In fact, and you're selling me on this notion, which actually irony is a more fundamental element than absurdity. Is that? Would you believe that even after this conversation? I don't know if I'm quite there, but you're selling me on it a little bit.
I'm getting close. Again, I think absurdity defined requires a notion of meaningfulness or purposefulness, right? Air, earth, and fire, water,
and an expectation of such, yes, given exactly. The context.
Yeah. If you were
expecting something. And you need context in order to expect something. That's why you explained beautifully so. You explained why our sense of humor is kind of – it's aligned because we expect kind of the same things. Like we understand the same things. We're on the same page in that way. And so what I call absurdity, which is something that it detracts from what you expect.
I'm trying to give you a little bit more respect than that. I think that if you agree with me or go along with the nonsense that I'm spouting, which is that irony is a fundamental aspect of understanding, I think that absurdity is the eventual spiritual realization of what creation is. So at the very first you got nothing, there's the void, and then God created irony, and out of irony he built the universe. And then a bunch of people said, what does it all mean? And then when they realized what it meant, what it means is absurdity. So you start with irony and you get to absurdity, and that encompasses every fucking thing that ever existed. So I don't want to tell you, Joe, that absurdity should be dismissed. I think that if you wanted to be like really crazy, you could just say that take the context of context, and in that context, absurdity and irony are the same thing, because you just flip the meaning of the universe on its head. And now, I guess here's what I'm getting at. If everything that's funny is ironic, then irony will inevitably always, when investigated, lead to absurdity.
Okay. Now, we're kind of in the weeds, but I understand what you just said. And it's this. I feel like in some instances, all you need is irony if it's well-placed.
Yeah.
And if it's surprising. Now, we're almost making an argument for the fact – or it's not a fact. We're making an argument that surprise is a core element of humor.
Well,
surprise.
Well, yeah, because – but – and this is why I always kind of hem and haw when I hear that. It is a surprise.
What?
No. It is a surprise. When the joke – when the punchline hits, you're surprised. However – it's not funny unless you recognize it, if you understand it, if it's acceptable. I can surprise you with a lot of shit, Joe, that isn't going to make you laugh. I can say, hey, guess what's in my pocket? And you say, I don't know. I say, a penny. That's not funny. It's a surprise. It's not funny. But I say, hey, guess what's in my pocket? And you say, what? And I say, my dick. Okay, that's not funny either,
humor, surprise is necessary but not sufficient in order to create humor. And in you're saying that irony is the same.
No. I think that
if I were walking to get a glass of water in the middle of the night and somebody stabbed me in the fucking chest in the dark, I would be surprised.
Yes.
Would it be funny? I think not.
And it wouldn't be funny, nor would it be.
Surprise does not in and of itself make humor, and neither does irony, neither does absurdity.
I know. I say that anything that you can point to that is ironic, you can find humor in it. You can't necessarily do that with anything, but you can do it with anything if you are willing to somehow insert irony. For your example of you're walking to the sink in the middle of the night to get a glass of water, that was your example, right?
Yeah, in the dark.
And somebody stabs you. Okay, that mm-hmm. all by itself isn't ironic, but we can make it ironic. We just have to add something, right? All you got to do is add something. Make it ironic.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say, yes, and I'm already on board with you, but surprise is even more a core element of humor than irony, because you don't need to fucking make something a surprise. What you need to do – oh, wait. Maybe I'm finally coming to the light here. Surprise is a core element, but without irony, it couldn't possibly be funny. Getting stabbed in the fucking chest when you're trying to get a glass of water, sure, that can be funny. Actually, the more I think about it, it's kind of I'm getting on board with it. But maybe because I'm starting to understand the irony of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could make
the argument. And the absurdity.
I think you could make the argument that surprise is ipso facto ironic. To go from not knowing something to knowing something, where's the transition point? And you know, where is the middle ground from not knowing to knowing? I mean, you could make the point that that's ironic. And if you're walking to the kitchen to get a glass of water and you get stabbed, I mean, we could probably find a way to make that ironic. And certainly we could film it and somehow narrate it and put it in a context that makes it hilarious, right? We could definitely do that. But the surprise aspect of irony is that once the surprise happens, you have to recognize that you have to be able to recognize that it was either inevitable or it makes sense. To just somebody just pop up and say stab, it's like, that's, where did that come from? That doesn't make any sense. It's not funny. But if somebody pops up and stabs you, go, oh, I know why that happened. That's hilarious. That's where the irony is rooted in. Let me give you a joke. Let me give you two jokes, okay?
Holy shit. No, I get it. But go ahead. Give me some more examples.
Here's some jokes. It'll be funny. Here's some jokes. First I'm going to do a Hitler joke, and this is a terrible joke. And I apologize in advance, but I think it's contextually appropriate. I read this joke last week. I didn't make it up. So this
it'll be the first Hitler joke, by the way, because I brought up Hitler, but
you got jokes
none
too.
Of this shit's been a joke until hopefully now.
Okay.
Continue.
So guy walks into a bar and he sees this dude at the other end of the bar who looks like an old Hitler. So he says to the bartender, what's the deal with old-looking Hitler over there? And the bartender says, oh, yeah, that's actually Hitler. It's him. He faked his own death, and he's been hanging out here ever since. If you buy him a beer, he'll talk to you. So the guy buys him a beer, and he introduces himself, and Hitler says hi, and he says, hey, it's something I've always wondered. How many Jews did you kill personally? And old Hitler thinks about it, and he goes, I killed about 518 Jews and 3 clowns myself. And the guy goes, wait a minute, 3 clowns? Why'd you kill 3 clowns? And Hitler goes, see? No one cares about the Jews. Now, you're laughing, even though that's a disgusting
It's thing, horrible.
Right? It's horrible. But it's ironic, and therefore it's funny, right? And we apologize, and we say, oh, we don't hate Jews, and we're not pro-Hitler, and we know the joke is disgusting and stupid, and we're just giving it to you in the context of a discussion of irony. But the truth of the matter is, we laughed despite ourselves because we didn't know what was coming. And then once we saw it, we understand why it had to happen.
As soon as it hit, the context all of a sudden caves in on you. And that's what makes it funny.
It was this realization. It's the same when you're watching a movie or a TV show, wherever mm-hmm. there's a climax, you go like, oh, I get now. Right. You probably even had that experience where you're watching a movie that's not funny, but when you get it, you find yourself laughing. You're like, aha, I get it now, right?
Well, I didn't expect this, but I should have, is that I understand humor more deeply now that I've talked to you about it in this way, in this manner. And here, I wanted to explain something to you before I take a piss. There is this podcast. There's this podcast called My Favorite Murder. Yes. Listen to it all the time. Shags and Pauline listen to it all the time. I think they're heavily influenced by it. There's, it's like when you learn to play guitar. If you like the blues, you play the blues, right? Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you're ripping all blues artists off when you're playing the guitar. You're like, oh shit, it's the blues. I love it. Well, I listened to Quietly Judging You, and it was reminiscent. It just sounded like, in a way, the My Favorite Murder mm-hmm. podcast. And but I was like, wait, but they've got their own little thing here too. Like, they're inspired by this, and they're moving forward with it. We'll talk a little bit more about their podcast because they recorded their first one. We need to post it.
Oh, we do. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. It's really funny. But I was like, wow, it is like reminiscent. They're inspired by these other funny girls. And then I've been listening to the podcast more and more because it really is great. And you know what they started doing?
What's that?
One of the girls takes a pee in the middle of the fucking episode.
Awesome. Joe, we're at the end of the show. You need to go pee, so let's do this.
Whoa, we made it to the end of the goddamn show?
End of the goddamn show. Go take a pee. I'll tell my other joke. You'll listen to it when – you'll hear the joke when you listen to the podcast later. And then at some point, you can come in and screen something hilarious while I'm typing up the show notes. We cool with that?
Fair enough.
All right. Good night, everybody. Sorry about that. I shouted good night into the microphone because I leaned forward. Okay, here's the joke for Joe. Guy has a friend who dies, very unfortunate. He goes to the funeral, goes up to the widow, and he says, I was wondering if I could say a few words in front of everyone here. And the wife says, of course, that would be very appropriate. So he stands up and he says, plethora. And the wife says, thank you, that means a lot to me. Same guy, unfortunately, another friend dies. This friend happens to be Mexican. And so he goes up to the wife, the widow, at the funeral, and he says, I was hoping I could say a few words in front of everyone. The widow says, of course, that would be lovely. And so the guy stands up in front of everyone, and he says, el mundo. And the wife says, thank you, that means the world to me. And just one more before I mute myself, and if you're lucky, forever. This is not a true story, but I'm going to pretend it is. A friend of mine recently passed away. He died. He drowned. And so we buried him with a flotation device because that's what he would have wanted.
Actually, I'm going to scream a couple of different punchlines. Nah, fuck it, just one more. To get to the other side!
Oh.